What an extremely full day this morning. And we are looking forward to a special congregational meeting at the end of our service, a four-minute meeting, some have suggested. Such fullness, such activity, such intentionality as a congregation, why, that's just great. But I want to share with you a few thoughts about this past week. And I will start with last weekend. I was attending my annual Universalist Heritage Study Group at the Wayside Inn in Sudbury, Massachusetts, a historical museum that still operates as a small inn. On Sunday evening, a few of us slipped into a very special hidden parlor where, inside an antique armoire, a few of us opened the doors and found a not very 18th or 19th century widescreen television. The only one in this 1696 inn. We watched the game. And I got to sit around a room full of New England fans and watch. Now, it's a funny, oddly shaped room stuck behind a couple of chimneys, and I was asked to sit quietly in the corner in the Baltimore section. Now, the score crept up. New England 3, Baltimore 0. Well, my section was quiet. Baltimore, and their section was so patronizing, but that's another story. Baltimore 7, New England 3. Oh, New England 10, Baltimore 7. It became time for our evening session of orientation and check-in and worship. And so as we went into the meeting room, the questions arose. Did you see the game? Someone asked as we were entering into the old kitchen. How's it going? We're up 10-7. I said, excuse me, we're down 10-7. Who's this wee pale face? Not everyone in this room is rooting for the Patriots. Well, there were a few chuckles, but the sentiment around this 16-foot-long old kitchen table, lit by candles and heated by a blazing fire in this gigantic old hearth, was that New England was going to have its day, of course, and have its way with the Ravens. It was inevitable. At the conclusion of worship, and I will say, I love this group of people. I love this group of people. At the end of every worship service, we just sing, amen, 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 amen. Then we all sing it again. Amen. Not bad. Amen. Beautiful. Amen. 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 And then we bring the two. It's quiet in the room. Warm feelings rekindled after being apart for a year. And my buddy, Hank, reaches into his pocket, pulls out his smartphone, and I think Baltimore won. Other people start pulling out their phones. Yeah. Well, I was very kind. I was so kind. They were beating their breasts, and I said, "Good morning, Baltimore. Every day's like an open door. Every night's like a fantasy. Every sound like a symphony." But no, I was so kind. I was reminded by the staff downstairs that they could slip things into my food if I wasn't good. It has been a fun week here in Baltimore, has it not? Town painted purple, team ready to be sent off to New Orleans in style. Friendly wagers being proposed by community leaders, and kids are wearing Ravens jerseys to Sunday school. These festivities anchor our enthusiasm. They fix our delight in being Baltimoreans right here, right now. We need to be fixed. No. I'm not talking about Baltimore needing to be fixed, although it must be indeed repaired. But we need to be fixed, that is, attached, secured, anchored. Not fixed versus broken, but fixed versus adrift. We crave anchors, at least I do. I crave anchors in my life, things that stabilize our lives. You may have seen the op-ed that I wrote for the Baltimore Sun this week about a couple that came to our church hoping to get married. I've been talking with them for over a year now. And in that year, they've had 3 addresses. They both worked for Walmart at the start of this, but a few months ago, one of them got laid off. And while they had come to a place of imagining that they actually had the resources to start a family together, to find their own apartment together, indeed, that's not going to happen right now. And so, when the last set of arrangements ran out, they moved from living in the living room of a friend to living in the living room of an aunt. They're trying, in spite of their financial challenges, to get anchored. And part of their anchor is having viability as a family. Part of their anchor is to have the resources they need, and relying on one another, they believe they are finding the anchors that can secure their lives. It's important for each of us, I believe, to tend our anchors. I read a few articles on coaching in the last month, personal coaching, and one brought up the need for this anchoring, and especially for anchoring the good in our psyches. I mean, here's where I might start. Have you ever been scared by a shadow? If you have, that's good for you. Evolution taught you how to do that. You see, once upon a time, there was a person who was a potential ancestor of us who looked at a shadow and said, "No big deal. It's just a stick." But the fact of the matter is, the shadow was actually a snake. And so the person who got bit, who mistook the shadow for a stick, didn't become our ancestor. The person who mistook the shadow for a snake is the person who's learning the reserves of suspicion, learning to cope with some fear and anxiety, responding to the unknown by pulling back and being protective. It's part of who we are as a species. We gotta do that. That's how we survived. We looked at a shadow and saw a snake. Happily, all around us are sticks. Our natural propensity, my coaching colleague insists, is that we are suspicious and cautious and aware of danger even when there is no danger. It's part of our survival mechanism, part of what it means to be human. the negative attitudes we carry sometimes, the negative stories we tell to ourselves, the negative interpretations we bring to events are the easy, quick response hardwired into us as we are just part of the animal kingdom trying to survive. I'm not good enough, many of us say to ourselves. I'm not smart enough. I'm not capable enough. I'm not skinny enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not blonde enough. I'm not young enough. I'm not rich enough. These quick negative assessments are naturally where we are placed, fixed, anchored. A good coach, and I hope good parenting, and maybe good leadership of adults to children in a church, says something different. You have all the resources you need to be fabulous. You have all the intelligence you need to figure your way through this. You have all the strong relationships available to you to accompany you in this difficult time. Coaching someone requires reframing and retelling their story in a way that is memorable, enduring, and located in a place where it might get anchored, secured, set, fixed. We anchor things in our life together. We have a celebration to take down the civil marriage banner because it's obsolete, and we know that we are a positive force in the world and we can be about the making of justice, and so we anchor that in this place. People come from another part of the country and affirm with us that we've done something. Darn it, ain't that great? Our celebration gets posted on the website of Standing on the Side of Love, and there we get anchored. People all around the country are saying, hey, Baltimore, not only does their football team win, but First Unitarian is making a difference in the world. This is a place where our faith is anchored in effectiveness and in the changing of unjust laws. Our congregation chooses to center its life around ministry to and with and for people in poverty and in homelessness. We write it on a big poster and anchor it in our minds by fixing it in the room where our board meets and deliberates. We fix that idea in our minds and hearts and our consciousness. Poor people in our society are like a shadow. They could be a stick. They could be a snake. We know that we don't only need to be afraid. We can build relationships with poor people because we are poor. All of us. And we are rich, all of us and the poor people we encounter. And we can anchor our ideas in actions. I'll tell you, I wrote the opinion piece in collaboration with the statewide coalition to raise the minimum wage. We anchor ourselves, not necessarily in that particular idea. In this church, as a matter of fact, we may have a variety of opinions about that particular struggle. But we anchor ourselves in the notion that this is the kind of church where we do engage the public arena, where we are willing to join with others to bring about change, where we can be effective and in articulating our faith. When our member Adrian Hilliard tweets about that article and the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee retweets it and makes it accessible from their website, we begin to be anchored in people's minds all around the place, that this is a congregation that is ready to be involved. We're at the beginning of our campaign to renew our commitments here at First Unitarian to renew our financial commitments, of course, but to consider the many ways that this place is an anchor for many of us, a place that fixes us, attaches us to our deepest aspirations, holds our keenest struggles, and secures our broadest joy. A coach will say that these thoughts and feelings get attached to our normally fearful, skeptical, and doubting animal hearts by the application of time. We can't glibly say that we know what's going on there. Our fearful, skeptical, doubting hearts look at the church and her financial commitments and see bills and shortages and ceilings that are flaking and a plaster that is cracked and a very part-time sexton when the need is greater, etc., etc., etc. That's where we're naturally going to run. But to anchor our financial commitments not in those problems, the shortages, the challenges, but to the good, to the benefit of being part of this kind of a community where we may be of use to the greater good, serving humanity and seeing the divine at work in the choices we are able to make together. These are things to which we must attach our recommitment to this place. These are the things by which we must be anchored. Anchoring ourselves takes time, a lifetime perhaps, but otherwise, a coach would say, about 18 to 20 seconds. It takes about 18 to 20 seconds for you to consider the encouragement, to then allow it to move beyond impulse, either to your thinking center or your feeling center, depending upon kind of how you approach things in the world, in that thinking or feeling center, for you to challenge it, consider it, affirm it, and ultimately then it drops down into a deep place, some might call it the soul, that says something like, this church is a place where I grow. There's the idea. I think about it. This church is a place where I grow. If I don't participate, I don't grow as much. If I over-participate, I die. thinking. But then I come to a place that says, yes, this is a place where I grow. And it gets tested and anchored and comes to a deep place. And a coach will tell you it's going to take 18 to 20 seconds. We take a breath. And there it is, a reality anchored in our psyche. This church is a place where I can grow. Let your light shine so that all may see. I hear these words spoken and I am given a candle. I've got a few seconds of standing in line and thinking, what the heck is that about? And wondering, is it true for me? And feeling, yes, I have a light. Yes, I should let it shine for all to see. And it takes me 18 to 20 seconds, and it comes down to a deeper place of affirmation and attachment and security and anchor. Let your light shine that all may see. I call our services celebrations of life. What we have been calling the worship team and what we're beginning to call the celebrations team considers together how we fix our time together with dependable reaffirmations of what anchors us. A song that speaks beyond our consciousness, a reading which we hear and say more than once and it begins to remind us who we are as a community, a handshake or hug or holy bow that allows us to live into a truth that says we are indeed a welcoming and affirming place. A candle lighting that is an event not like much we do in the rest of life, to stand in line and get something and then to make of it what makes sense to us. That anchors something special for each of us in the set-aside place, the sacred place that we form by our actions. This year, as we make our financial commitments to this place, we ask that all who participate in the life of this congregation do so, participate financially in a way that takes at least 18 seconds, to move from a propositional recommitment to this place to something that can be considered and reconsidered and balanced and challenged, but that deeply gets to the place that says, yes, this is my community. This is a place where I want to belong. This is a place where, whether I'm a member or not, whether I'm a long-term participant or someone rather new, that this is a place where I want to make a significant statement about who I am and how I want to anchor my life. This is a year where we're going to be doing some things a little differently. The one-time change is we're shifting our financial year so that it more closely aligns with our program year. It means we have this funny shaped year. It's a 14-month year coming up. And it's something about, it's strange. It's a shadow. Is it a stick? Is it a snake? It could be something about which we had all kinds of anxiety. But the fact of the matter is, it's a simple thing. Every month, people make commitments to this church. And sometimes we do that 12 times in a year. And sometimes we do that 14 times in 14 months. Doesn't sound very different. I don't think I need to be afraid of that snake. I think I need to just say simply, this is a place that means a lot to me. This is a place where whether I can do $25 a month or $200 a month, which is what I try to do, or $1,000 a month, which some of our people are able to do, that whatever your commitment is going to be, just think about that regular monthly contribution to this place. And in terms of the figuring out exactly how that fits into the financial plan and things like that, the 12-month, the 14-month, the 12 plus 2, blah, 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 that's a shadow. It's a prop to get us through functioning as a church. It ain't a snake. It ain't gonna bite you. We don't have to be anxious about it. We could get lost in the anxiety of this small and good change, but we also may take a moment and anchor something new. This year's promise is a chance for me to illustrate how grateful I am to be alive, to be a part of this community, to be engaged with others in making meaning in my life. I consider this assertion. I challenge it, reformulate it, tend it, and let it sink deeply into my psyche. This year's promise illustrates how grateful I am to be alive, to be in this community, to be about the task of making meaning in my own life. Once in my life, I felt rootless, and shifty, and battered by storms. Once in my life, I might have said, I was lost. But this community found me. This community gave me a place where I could find safe harbor. This church became an anchor for me and for all that is important to me. Not a snake, not a stick, but a secure location out of which I can serve a city that invites my gifts, out of which I can serve a congregation that cares and connects, out of which I can serve the high purpose of a love that is working in the world to collect all that is good and to bring all things into harmony. I once was lost, but now I'm found, anchored, safe, and secure. Blessed be.